Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules. Yes, Hercules. I am real and I am active in modern times. Yet I cannot claim the honor of being the only manifestation of antiquity's totemic lion man. Though he was enshrined in myth long ago, as an immortal, he still adventures in our collective psyches. New tales are forever being told of Heracles, as my ancestors knew him, and the old tales are continuously being retold. As in ancient times, Heracles may appear in different guises and answer to various names, but nonetheless, the greatest hero of the Greeks remains distinctly himself and instantly recognizable to all who take the time to know him. Know that it is my custom to seek out and learn from all these incarnations and iterations of my divine ancestor, operant archetype, tutelary deity, and highest self. At times, the lessons these cultural artifacts contain is crystal clear. At other times, their secrets require some thought or quiet contemplation. Yet there is always wisdom to be gleaned or a life lesson to be learned. So onwards. I am Hercules Invictus, and these are the legends of Hercules. Tonight, I'm greatly honored to have Michael Oden, who is the creator of the comic book series The Elysian Fields, and he includes Heracles, as you called him, among his adventures. Greetings and welcome, Michael. How are you?
We're doing fantastic, Heracles. We're doing. We're hanging out. Really excited to talk to you guys about Heracles's involvement in Elysian Fields.
Yes, I was very intrigued when you were on the show with Nicholas and Michelle, and this show the focus is slightly different, but you brought up a lot of things during that show that intrigued me. So you've had a lifelong love of mythology.
Yes. I think I mentioned on the last show, but when I was growing up, one of the big bedtime stories my dad would read me was this beautifully illustrated version of the Iliad and the Odyssey. And, cool pictures are worth 1,000 words for a little kid. So you go off and you go start to look for other things like it. And, it was also a whole thing where, while I was growing up, the Disney movie came out, and so that obviously helped in taking a look into the actual myth of Hercules and finding out that they are nothing alike. always been a huge passion of mine. I've always been very drawn to myths, and it's one of those things where it was really cool, kind of blending those two mediums between comic book and mythology, where, like the American superhero and comic book is kind of the latest iteration continuing that tradition of old.
Yes, I'm a strong believer in that, and we've devoted countless shows to that particular topic. In fact, we have one coming up next week, that the comic book superheroes are the modern iterations of the gods of old. And there were some excellent books. One that I really enjoyed reading was Our Gods Wear Spandex, which was a book about that.
Oh, that sounds interesting. I don't think I've actually heard of that one. I'll have to add that to the list. It sounds really cool. Because I've been saying that for years, where it's the heroes of myth were these characters that embodied the ideal traits of Greek society.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at the modern superhero, and there are these some of those traits have certainly been passed down, but there are others that have become more prevalent as they've become more ingrained in society as we've carried along. It's really a tremendous thing to look at, and I do find it absolutely fascinating that it doesn't matter how how we've progressed as a society or anything like that, the idea of of heroes embodying the best of what we can be as people, as something to reach for, to strive for, and be better in our own lives is something that is timeless and has inspired some of the greatest people to do the greatest things that they have throughout time and even today.
Very, very true. Are you aware that there's a modern day real life superhero movement, RLSH?
Yes, I am actually. There's a whole bunch of people that effectively they are. They obviously don't have like arrest authority or anything like that, but they operate within the confines of the law in their respective areas, and they help keep the streets safe. Cool thing.
I've had several of them on the show in the past, and before I had the podcast, I interviewed them for a website. Very fascinating, and they too were interested in the mythic archetypes and in these archetypes as they appeared in comic books, and they all found ways either being like a neighborhood watch. Or of attacking bigger evils like homelessness or illiteracy and devoting their time and energy to doing that in a more symbolic fashion. So I find that very fascinating.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, there's I think that speaks a lot to, you know, the whole nature of the hero is it doesn't necessarily have to be you've taken out the bad guy, but providing – a service to help those in need, and that's always a big thing.
Now, you had said that the concept for the Elysian Fields arose out of a game you used to play, that kind of pitted one hero against another. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah. So, you know, when I was growing up, as kids are like to do, you surround yourself with other people with similar interests.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we would as the bunch of nerdy kids we were, we would have debates on like which one of our favorite, you know, fictional characters would win in fights. But it would always also go like a step further. Like you'd have your like standard things between like Star Wars, Star Trek, stuff like that. But you'd also have, we'd also be going back and forth on like mythology and which mythological heroes and everything that we enjoyed. And that was a big thing as well. So that played a big part in the story. And that served as the main inspiration.
And how did you choose the heroes? There would be the main protagonist of the Elysian Fields. And how did you choose Hades to be their patron? That's a very interesting a choice of deities.
So the big things when it came down to picking the squad, Achilles has always been one of my favorite characters in any story whatsoever. You know, when I was a kid, it was as simple as, you know, he was the best in the Iliad, and
right,
he was the guy that won the fight and everything. And so it was as simple as that. But as I got older, you know, I got to learn more about the character and really appreciate the nuance in how he is written and all the interesting character quirks, character traits that he has. I've always wanted to play with him as a character, and so that was a no-brainer for me. But as for the other two, hold on 1 second. Sorry about that. As for the other two, Heracles is like, if you're going to have a team of Greek heroes, you know, there are certain people that are going to be expected, and you cannot have a team of Greek heroes without probably the most iconic of them. So like, you know, Heracles is the son of Zeus. He conquered the 12 labors.
the amount of stories about him, you know, you could go on for days.
Right.
And so that was a pretty simple pick for that. And so as far as Theseus was concerned, I wanted to pick someone that was iconic, but I also wanted it to be someone that not necessarily everyone would expect. You know, the other big name that you'd think would go on a team like that would be Odysseus. And
yeah.
So I also wanted to keep it, into that wheelhouse of this is a hero that built his reputation off of being clever. And so Theseus's big feat is sorry about that.
That's okay.
I apologize. I'm on a walk.
Oh, okay.
And I've got a 2-year-old at home, and so it's a lot easier to do this with him not crawling all over me.
Understood. I'm a parent too. Our kids are in their 20s and 30s now. One's approaching 40, but I'm a parent as well, so I certainly understand.
Oh, absolutely. No, my guy isn't there yet, but they grow way too quick, man.
Yes,
they
do.
Really do. But as I was saying, I wanted the third member to be someone that was known for their cleverness. And Theseus is kind of perfect for that fit without going into the weird guys like Oedipus.
That's very true. Oedipus
so,
has like, a lot of baggage. And
yeah, certainly. But so Theseus was the kind of that perfect fit. As I said, you know, his big thing was beating not only the Minotaur, but getting out of the labyrinth.
Right.
And, you know, even later on, this is the guy that was credited with founding the city of Athens, which was, you know, everyone associates Athens as the city of critical of like as the birthplace of democracy and Socrates and everything like that. And so I felt like he was kind of a perfect fit to round out the trio.
Uh-huh.
And as for Hades, you know, it was this whole thing where I was trying to find a mechanism to bring all these heroes and everything together. And while every person dies, it doesn't matter how great of a myth you are, everyone does. And so the way that I decided would be the best way to do this and have all these different mythologies interact was to have all of these heroes be dead. And each team of heroes is representative of their respective god of the dead or lord of the underworld, whatever their title may have been in their respective mythologies.
That's very clever. And the Greek underworld is very interesting in that it had a physical location with actual caves that led to it. So that when you died, if you were important enough, and this holds true even today in like rural areas, somebody will come take you and bring you to the underworld. But if you're not, you know where the nearest entrance is. So you just make your way there when you die. And if your family did not perform the rites and leave you with the money you needed to cross over to the other side, then they would get haunted. So it's a pretty workable system that they've used for thousands of years.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, that was, you know, that and that all kind of plays a big part in it. Where, you know, not you see a whole bunch of spirits kind of haunting the not really haunting, just kind of as spectators, but they're not a whole, they're not these heroes. And it's another way to kind of set these guys apart from the other dead, is these are These are heroic champions that have earned their place to fight in this arena through the deeds that they had in life. Because, like, as you said, you know, like, not everyone who dies got the same treatment, especially in Greek mythology. You had, you know, obviously the big two things that are talked about are the Elysian Fields,
yes,
and Tartarus. But
mm-hmm.
if you were buried and you weren't given passage, or even if you were given passage to pay for to go over the River Styx, and you didn't really do anything, you're effectively just sitting there.
In the actual field. Without memory. So you're sitting there with amnesia. Some people claim that was very merciful because you didn't remember all of the torments of life. And you're just kind of like in this state of unknowing.
Oh, absolutely. No, and it is an interesting thing. And but, like, as I said, it's nothing quite as glorious. And so, you know, you've got these people who are fighting in the arena, and, you know, you're like, oh man, they look great, but that's not necessarily the case for everyone that's died. So, you know, you've got people just kind of hanging out.
Are you there? Michael, I seem to have lost you.
Sorry about that. My signal just... Yeah, I'm sorry about that. My signal dropped.
That's all right. That's very interesting. And the honored dead or the mighty dead communities, and again, today, even in modern times, just about every square in Greece, every public square has an Iron, which is a hero shrine. And sometimes it's named for a particular local hero. Sometimes it's to an unknown soldier. It's there and it's very visible. And in rural areas, they still do as they did in antiquity and feed the snakes that live there, because the snake was thought to be a representation of the hero. And it was said that if you honored the local heroes in times of trouble, they would come back and fight for you. And in the course of my interviewing, I've met many people who've related tales of, like, Hercules coming and helping their family during World War II, you know, to get out of impossible circumstances. So, you know, these beliefs are ancient, but they still linger in out of the way places. So it's great that you've taken this and you've made it into legends for people of today, in a medium that people of today relate to.
Yeah, no, and that was honestly one of the big goals with this, is to bring these stories to this modern audience. I feel there's a romanticism to these characters and these stories that are honestly, like, the basis for a lot of what, you know, a lot of the stories that we still even tell today. And like, with everything going on, I think it provides a great amount of escapism. It gives people something to you know, if not believe in, cherish.
Right.
And, you know, these stories have stood the test of time for a reason. And so that was one of the big cool things, was not just bringing Greek myths, but, like, you know, we have the team Hades is going up against Team Osiris in Pyramid Gambit. We're bringing in the Egyptians. We had Gilgamesh and Enkidu from Epic of Gilgamesh appear in the Zero issue and get taken out during the beginning of this book. We're going in and really bringing these mythological characters to the forefront. So hopefully somebody reading will be like, man, that guy was really cool. Who was he? And then go and look into these stories and spark interest into them, because they deserve to keep going.
That's very true. And Back in the day when I was in college, I wrote a paper on what you just talked about, how the popular culture iterations of these ancient myths draw people, not a lot of people, but a handful of people into the scholarship to try to find the sources of these legends. And then, you know, basically the scholar and the artist are needed to keep these legends living because these stories live through popular culture. And then the scholars are kind of like the priestly case that preserves the fountain where they come from.
100%. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that because, you know, a while ago, I remember Avengers Infinity War had come out and I saw that. And there were so many parallels. The big thing that really stood out to me was that Thanos' story was very similar, if not almost mirrored, and was identical to Agamemnon's story with Iphigenia at Aulis.
Yes, yes.
Even down to the fact that Red Skull's garb was very reminiscent of the high priest that tells him that, you know, if you're going, yeah, it's just really cool to see. It's like, whether it's intentional or it was implanted there subconsciously, it's just really awesome to see how these stories have affected even the big modern storytelling that we see in comics and comic book films and everything like that. It was really cool, and that's one of those things that I hope to keep fostering with Elysian Fields.
Well, Thanos means death in Greek, and he was a Titan, and in Marvel he comes from the planet Titan, and his father was Alars, whose real name is Mentor, and who is the son of Kronos, who is the father of Titan. So that whole storyline was not very far. And his brother is Eros, which not only harkens back to Greek mythology, but also to Freudian psychology, where he made Eros and Thanatos like you know, the basic primal impulses. So Marvel made them brothers and Titans and folded them into Jack Kirby's attempt at pantheons.
Yeah, and I think you raise a really great point there, and it's always really cool to see how all this stuff kind of ties together in the end. It's one of the great parts about getting a chance to do this is it almost feels like, you know, this is one of the best ways that you could bring these characters forward is because these were the superheroes of old.
Yes.
You know, these were your Supermans. These were your Captain Americas. These were your Batman. Like these were the characters that kind of shaped it all. And so to bring them into this over-the-top kind of comic book where it's just about showcasing them as complete badasses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things where I really feel like I'm getting to play with them in their, and honestly, their own playground with a bit of a modern twist to it.
Now, you're not only taking them into different mythologies, you're also moving them through time. So their adventure is timeless, but it takes place in various periods in history. That sounds like a phenomenally intriguing concept.
Well, so time is kind of a time in Elysian Fields is not something that's really addressed. We don't really know what time period it is. All we know is that it's at a point where all of these mythologies have existed, and all of them have heroes and champions to fight for them. So like we have no clue. But we do know that Achilles had spent lifetimes in his afterworld. You know, he was at peace for a good chunk of time, tucked away in a memory before he got brought to the tournament. And so we don't really know how that's affected as far as like what's going on up top, because it doesn't really play at odds on this. It's just a matter of, you know, like the tournament is going on, and we know that we get hints that time has passed to a degree where, you know, the Greek pantheon is no longer the mighty force that it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are other powers that are there in the tournament that, you know, are doing a lot better and have a bit of an advantage as a result.
So the pantheons are fed by the worship or the attention of their followers?
Correct.
Okay.
The way that it kind of works is that the human soul kind of acts like a nuclear reactor of divine mana.
Okay.
And through the prayers of their followers, they're fueled and restored divine mana. And so the big thing with being king of the underworld is that you effectively have a endless supply of divine mana that's at you, like you are in charge of it.
Okay.
So you can effectively.
That's an interesting concept.
Yeah. It was one of those things that I've had kicking around in my head for a bit. And it's, I've like, there have been other stories that have done similar things, but like, I wanted to kind of bring my own original take in on it.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, that's honestly like the big part of storytelling is at the end of the day, all of it kind of follows the same kind of beats and numbers. It's just a matter of making it work with your own spin.
Is there and are there any plans to go past the comic book medium into games, whether it be a role-playing game or a card game or a video game or a cartoon? I can see, you know, from what I've seen, it would fit perfectly in those mediums as well.
And, you know, I am never against doing any of that. But for me, the big focus is always and will always be making a good comic for people to enjoy. Now, if somebody approaches me and says, hey, we want to turn this into a game, or we want to turn this into a Netflix animated series, or this, that, the other, I mean, I'm not going to say no. That's, like, I don't think anyone in my position would. We'd probably, you know, our jaw would hit the floor and be like, really? I mean, yeah, what do we got to do? But at the end of the day, the goal is to make a quality book for people to just enjoy and have a good time with. And so while that stuff would be cool, I can't say that it's something that I'm planning for, because I feel that there are a lot of guys that get kind of caught up in that side of things.
Uh-huh.
And as a result, they lose focus on the thing that brought them there in the first place.
Understood and very wise. What made you choose comic books? Are comic books your favorite form of escapism and adventure?
So the big thing that made me choose that was, so I have attention deficit disorder. And
okay,
so when I was growing up.
So do I.
Sorry.
It's a great thing. Once you know how to use your brain, and there was a great book written by Tom Hartman. I don't remember the name of the book, but it was about like a hunter in a farmer's world was the basic concept. You wrote a few books on it that showed me how my brain worked, and it liberated me. So it's a good thing.
No, it absolutely is. The big thing for me, though, is when I was growing up, I always really liked stories and everything, but I really had a hard time sitting down and reading like a novel. So the kind of way that I baby stepped to it was I was reading comics. And I fell in love with comic superheroes. I had two older brothers. It was the 90s, so they had comics galore, and I'd go through all their old collections and read them. And so I've always had this love of comics and comic book superheroes, and it's always been something that I've wanted to do. And so it was just, you know, I really wanted to do it. I sat down, I wrote my initial script after teaching myself how to do a comic script, and I sent it out to a few people, made sure that I wasn't just full of myself, to make sure that this would be appreciated by others. And then I started my hunt for an artist, and that's what led me down this path, is just a love of the genre. And, you know, as I said, I really think that bringing these myths to the forefront, comics is one of those perfect mediums, because you can really, as with it being this both literary and visual, you can really bring the spectacle that comes with the words from the old stories.
Very, very true. And in antiquity, they used pictures too. The pictures survive on plates and cups and on friezes and frescoes and in 3D sculpture. So the
100%
find their images with stories. And a lot of times, just by looking at an image, we can remember the story. You know, the story has also survived.
Absolutely, and that's, I think, again, it goes into carrying on that tradition. And as you said, you know, you look at I always get the name mixed up, because you got the Parthenon and the Pantheon. Parthenon is in Athens, Pantheon is in Rome.
Pantheon literally means all gods. And there was a Pantheon in Rome. But also the gods themselves were a pantheon. So the Olympians are considered a pantheon, aside and apart from any building.
Oh, 100%. It's just always one of those things that when I'm about to say it, I have to like double check myself, because if I go too quickly, I'll say the wrong thing and look like an idiot.
I do the same thing. No, everybody does that. That's fine. right now on Indiegogo, I put links to it. You have Elysium Fields issue 0, Elysium Fields the Pyramid Gambit, and then Elysium Fields Deluxe Collector Edition. Does the Collector Edition combine these first two, the issue 0 and the Pyramid Gambit?
They do. So effectively what we have going on is we had the 0 issue on Indiegogo. That's where we did our initial campaign. And we did that over the summer, and we got those fulfilled, and we closed the campaign, and we immediately got to work on the second book, The Pyramid Gambit. And so we've been running the Indiegogo here for the past few months. We've been in demand after getting fully funded, and that's been a tremendous thing to be able to get our book to those goals twice. And it's outstanding. And so we've had that open. And then we had a whole bunch of people reach out to me about wanting us to do a Kickstarter. And so with me coming to Kickstarter, I kind of wanted to make sure that everybody that was on the Kickstarter got a chance to read the 0 issue as well, since I hadn't been there before. And on our Indiegogo, we had a hardcover limited edition version of the book. And so while I couldn't really bring that over, what I decided to do was I decided to make a soft cover deluxe edition of the book as well, and make that the primary focus of our Kickstarter, as it combines the 0 issue and Pyramid Gambit and goes through and gives everyone a look at all the concept art, collects all of our pinups and variant covers and all of that stuff.
Oh, very cool. And what's next? After the Pyramid Gambit, where will our heroes go next?
So the Pyramid Gambit ends, and they're still fighting Team Osiris. It's actually looking pretty bleak for Team Hades, because they're getting overwhelmed. So the next book is called Pages of the Dead, and that will wrap up the fight against Team Osiris.
Okay.
And so that's where we'll be going next with Elysian Fields. And what I'm still in the middle of writing that script, so it'll be a little bit before we see that. But I will say that, and I think that this is a perfect time to talk about it, is Heracles plays a very big role in Pages of the Dead. And it's really interesting, because when I was first getting everything together, the character I was worried most about writing was Heracles. And after writing pages, what I have of Pages of the Dead, I can tell you right now that my favorite part of the series that I have written so far is for Heracles.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to read that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I definitely put him through a bit of a ringer. I'm sure that people are going to be contacting me like, what kind of sadistic person are you? How could you? Why? But I do think that it really highlights the kind of character Heracles is. And one of the things that I really wanted to bring forward is that, you know, Heracles, as much as he's a hero, he's also the Greek myths were, as much as they were heroes, they were also kind of cautionary tales about,
yes,
you know, excess and everything. And Heracles might have been the strongest and the most badass there ever was, but that came with his own set of character flaws.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also, as a result, very dangerous. And so
yeah,
I think that we get a lot of that in the book. That really shines through.
That's a very important point. It's very true. The Greek heroes were not perfect people. Being a person was hard, even for demigods, even for the gods themselves, when they were stuck in human form for a long or short period. Humanity wasn't like being a paragon was something very, very difficult, and something worthy of Elysium. And it took often three lives to get into Elysium, having lived as like a perfect person. It was not considered to be an easy thing into the ancient.
No, not
world
at all. 100%.
Each of the heroes had their tragic flaws, and some of their actions, like Theseus's actions and Odysseus's actions, that were heroic to the ancients, would be considered very shady by people today.
Oh, 100%. I think that's always like a fun thing to go into, is, you know, the conflict between modern concepts of morality versus antiquity. The concept of morality in antiquity. And, you know, like right in modern day, we put a very big emphasis on compassion and what have you. But when you look at a lot of these older heroes from like the Iliad or the stories of Heracles and everything, it's like, nah, he said he was going to go against you. You destroy that man.
They had a very different concept than we do. Marvel does a good job with that, and as does DC with Wonder Woman, however, in drawing attention to the fact that their natural inclinations and what they would normally do are very different than what the heroes of today are doing, because to the ancients, there was nothing wrong with certain necessary actions, whereas we're more squeamish about them.
Oh, 100%. And I agree with you, especially with Wonder Woman. I think it was the whole thing where, like, I think one of the big moments like that stands out to me was in the Justice League episode of Hereafter, where they kind of did their own take on Death of Superman, and she almost punches Toy Man's face in, and she's stopped by, I think, the Flash. And it's like, we don't do that to our enemies. And she says, you don't, I do.
And when she killed Maxwell Lord, too, that was something that horrified the heroes. But to her, it made sense. You know, you had to stop this
Well,
guy.
I mean, that end, what else were you going to do with that situation, given what Maxwell Lord was doing at the time? It's not like there was a way to stop him from mind controlling Superman. So, I mean, you got to do what you got to do sometimes. And that was one of the things that I like about Diana as a character and her place in the Trinity, where she's kind of this really interesting middle ground between Bruce and Clark's forms of justice, while also having her own set as well, where she is this, you know, ambassador for peace, and in that way she's very similar to Clark, but she's also a warrior and has the brutality of Bruce, but she's also not afraid to go lethal, and that separates her from those two as well, because neither of them will kill anyone. It's something that is intrinsic on their code of ethics.
Except for when there's an Elseworld type of thing, and they do, like with Injustice.
Yeah, we're not talking Elseworld stuff. I don't even want to go into that. Oh goodness, that's a whole other rabbit hole.
So I'm sure you have other ideas inside your head. I know that right now the Elysium Fields is what you're creating, but you do have plans to create another universes too, I'm imagining.
Yes, actually, we just announced our first superhero book.
Oh, wow.
That's coming in the spring, called The Embrace. It's kind of it's a darker take. It's got a lot of inspiration from James O'Bear's The Crow and Todd McFarlane's Haunt.
Okay.
And it's this story that kind of goes into has a lot of themes revolving around loss and justice, and dives deep into the relationship between the father and his son. And you know, it's, we're really excited. We announced it here last night, and we have a fantastic team coming together on that book. And, I'm pretty excited about that one as well.
Well, that is fantastic. I'm glad that you're expanding, and I wish you great success with it.
I appreciate it. Coming from the son of Zeus, that means a lot.
Thank you. And I'm sure at some particular point in time we'll have a crossover between the Elysian Fields and your superhero comic.
I don't know if those two will cross over. They don't really fit in each other's universes, like, at all.
There's
but, I mean, who knows?
The underworld, though, if it's like the Haunt and like the Crow, there is like the whole death underworld element there. So maybe.
And in that way, maybe. I will say that we do have a crossover planned for Elysian Fields with a completely other title by a different company that has a very similar concept.
Mm-hmm.
And that one. Again, like, as I said, you know, Hercules really surprised me when I was writing. And so the crossover for that book, I can't go into too many details about it just yet, but I will say the character that crosses over with the character from their book is Heracles.
Oh, awesome. That is fantastic. I'd love to cover that too. So as you guys progress with it, when you're free to talk about it, just let me know. We'll schedule a show.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure chatting with you guys here tonight. I apologize that there were some technical issues on my end here for the first part of the show. You know, perks of living out in the country are there's not too much, but there's also not a lot of great reception.
No, that's fine. We live in the information age, and the information age is very quirky. Even on much more professional shows, the same type of problems occur. So it's just something we have to deal with, and eventually they'll get better.
Absolutely.
We still have around 10 minutes. Do you need to go, or?
No. I wasn't sure. It sounded
okay.
Like we were coming to the end.
No. So how can people, we'll do this, and then we'll get into some more background stuff. How can people find your things on Indiegogo, on Kickstarter? How can they contact you and enter your world?
Okay, so the best ways to get in touch with me, all right, I've got my Twitter, which is at @ElysianFields_0. And that's, I post a lot of updates and everything on there. That's probably one of the best ways. We also have our Facebook page at Nine Realms Publishing. And then if you want to find our Indiegogo campaign, that's actually pretty simple. You just go into Google and look up Elysian Fields or even just Pyramid Gambit. And we're the first thing that comes up.
Okay.
Which is a pretty cool feat, because I remember when my campaign started, if you looked up Pyramid Gambit, the chess move would come up. And now my comic does. So
that is awesome.
I feel accomplished.
I know that feeling. Now when you type in Hercules Invictus, I come up for pages and pages and pages before the Roman Hercules Invictus, who has the temple in Rome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's a great. I put links to your Indiegogo, to your GoFundMe, to your Facebook page, and now I'm putting one in there for Nine Realms Publishing as well. And so
awesome, and I appreciate that.
Well, you're keeping the following alive. You're keeping it vital in the hearts and souls of people, and that's one of the things that I value most highly. So you're very welcome.
Well, I mean, you're doing the same. This podcast is fantastic. I've actually tuned in for a few of you guys' other episodes. And, you know, by having these kinds of discussions, you're doing the same thing.
Yes.
Keeping people talking about it is the way that it keeps getting spread around. And even if it's just some guy overhears a conversation that you have on your podcast and that influences him to write something, You've kept the tradition alive as well.
Very, very.
It all started through oral tradition anyway.
Do you have any goals for the year ahead? You have two comic books that are developing. You have a crossover with another company. Do you have any more bold dreams for 2021?
2021 is going to be a pretty interesting year. We've got the Embrace coming in the spring, which I'm really excited for. And then, you know, if that does well, we'll keep pushing ahead. We'll knock out that Elysian. My hope will be to have Pages of the Dead's initial script done here by February. So that way I was able to get a hold of an editor. And so then I'm going to send it off to him. And mm-hmm. then he'll make sure that I didn't write an incoherent piece of babble. And then once that script is done, I'll be sending that to Marcelo, and we'll be starting on Pages of the Dead. And so hopefully we can get that campaign going here in the fall, or maybe even late summer. It just all depends on how things go.
That is very exciting, too, and that our world, for all its problems, is one of unparalleled opportunity, and you no longer have to go through the types of steps you needed to go through before. Like, for instance, I used to have a television show like 20-something years ago. And, you know, back then it was such an expensive thing. And you had to have editors and filming and, you know, all this type of stuff. And now anybody with a camera for $20 from Walmart can start their own channel or a camera built into their PC. And again, you're producing comic books. You started your own thing, so you don't need to go through the whole process of, you know, starting with a limited run independent or applying and spending years at one of the bigger publishers until you can do your own thing. You were able to take a dream inside your mind and manifest it and move forward with it in ways that a couple of decades ago would have been very difficult.
Absolutely. And I think that right now is kind of the perfect time to get into that. I think everyone has collectively so much time to be able to do stuff. And, like, you know, that's kind of how I've approached it, is every free moment that I have, that I am available to do stuff, I start working out new ideas. And, you know, I think over the past few months I've written like 5 scripts for different series.
Awesome.
And so, like, that's the whole thing, is the only thing that's limiting anybody from doing this on their own is themselves. You know, you just gotta believe in what you have and work hard to get it right. I mean, it's going to take work. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to make sure that, you know, that you're putting out the best you can put out, and make sure that, like, if you're doing, like, say, a comic book script, you got to make sure that you know how to write one of those, because it is a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got to kind of set up for your pages to make the reader to want to turn to the next page. And that's a whole other art form in and of itself. So it takes work for sure, but the only thing holding you back from doing it is yourself. And if you just get out of your own head and really set your mind to it, you can do it.
You're very, very right. I started, Nick and Michelle were among the people that suggested I write for anthologies. And now I've been published in over a dozen anthologies, and something's coming out in January also. So now I'm a published author with an Amazon page, and I've gained a reputation with my mythic paranormal stuff.
That's awesome.
I decided that in 2021, I would take that, and I'm not starting from zero because I've done this for the past couple of years, and just build on it and start exercising my creativity in a much more focused way. And people like you are an inspiration, because you've done the same thing and you've succeeded, and we have all the tools to make it happen. And as you said, we certainly have the time now, and that's how I think of it as well. You know, that much of the things that drew me away, that would have me tied up in transporting myself from point A to point B, are now gone. So I have that extra time. I've been using it toward things that I want to do. And it is like you said. You are standing in your own way if you're not doing that.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think that's fantastic, man. I need to go check out some of your anthologies now. Is what I need to do. I'm always down for a good read.
Oh, awesome. I think some of them are on Kindle now. I would have been published through Timothy Beckley's company. I think it's called Inner Light Publishing, and they have lurid covers with, like, UFOs and things like that on them. But I grew up reading those books, and I always loved them. So it's great to be one of the authors now that writes in those books. And I've been published with some of my heroes from growing up as well. That was, like, a really cool thing. You know, because I grew up
That's outstanding.
Yeah, yeah. And it's possible. Anybody can do it. You know, it's just start doing it and don't stop. And you learn as you go along.
100%. But yeah, no, and that's really the beauty of the creative industries. It's just, you got to be creative. Got to figure out a way to make it happen.
And now we are at the end of our conversation, and that is a phenomenal place to end it. Thank you so very much. I enjoyed our conversation a great deal. I wish you the best in 2021 and beyond, and I look forward to following your career on our show. Thank you for being such a exemplar.
Well, thank you for having me. This is a fantastic show. I'm more than happy to come back whenever you'll have me. And Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, and to you and yours as well. And thanks to everybody who's joined us, whether you're listening live on New Year's Eve or whether you're going to be joining us later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys, amazing adventures, a healthy and happy holiday season, and a wondrous new year. We're going to close with Mighty Elohim by Linnell Griffin. Linnell was kind enough to let us use her song as part of our show. Take care, everybody, and thanks again, Michael.
Absolutely.